immediate postpartum period. Miriam Labach is going to talk to us about breastfeeding. She's a professor of practice at UNC Gillings School of Global Public Health, and she's director of the Carolina Breastfeeding Institute. And previously, she's done lots of other things. She was faculty at Hopkins at Georgetown. She was chief of the maternal health division at USAID, and also most recently was a senior advisor at UNICEF on infant and young feeding. She's going to talk about, does breastfeeding make a difference, the impact of exclusive breastfeeding on later health?
Yes. And a fellow Hopkins student with Marianne many moons ago. I am going to be speaking on a slightly different topic. Whereas the other speakers are talking about community efforts and being right there with the people, one of the tenets that of global health is to create the enabling environment so that people can be open to programs and have the personal resources for change. And it's for that reason that I've gotten heavily involved in breastfeeding. I didn't start here. I started out in family pediatrics and family planning, then maternal survival, and somehow I twisted around through the development of the lactational amenorrhea method of family planning to suddenly people think I know something about breastfeeding. So in the last decade or so, since 1990, I've been working primarily on breastfeeding. And one of the central program areas in the breastfeeding world, if you will, is the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative, and that's what this talk is about. I sometimes use off-label descriptions of how breastfeeding should be utilized, so that's my only disclosure. We're going to discuss a little bit about how implementation may vary very little bit, given the time constraints, understand why this intervention is so important, and outline some of the priorities to see if we can't increase interest in this. Now, theoretically, global and domestic financing for child survival is based on what has the greatest impact, right? Yeah. Okay. Nonetheless, the primary intervention for prevention of child deaths is known to be early and exclusive breastfeeding. This is from the Lancet series. 13% of the preventable deaths could be prevented with just early and exclusive breastfeeding. Where is the funding to back that up? This presentation explores one intervention that's known to work, showing some of the increases in breastfeeding that result from this, how implementation varies, and a little discussion of what we might need to do. Okay, let's talk first about the impact of Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative. For those of you who don't know, Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative calls on maternities and hospitals to practice 10 steps, very logical things, like having policy in place, telling women about breastfeeding, helping them with breastfeeding, immediate skin-to-skin, not having formula advertising all over the place, and not handing out free samples of formula, which we know defeats and undermines breastfeeding. So, when we tried to do a global analysis, which I had hoped to present to you today, what we found is, first of all, there are no available data on current baby-friendly hospital status around the world. We have data on hospitals ever certified, but there is nothing available on those that are currently active today. The second thing is that breastfeeding data are only available from DHS for a few points in time. Most countries only have a DHS or mix every 5 years or so. So when we try to set up those points in time against when that country initiated their baby-friendly hospital initiative, we found that only a very few countries, about 20, did we have data to look at this. So with these limitations, we did Cheryl Abrahams is carrying out a rather sophisticated analysis, and it does support the fact that the trend towards increasing exclusive breastfeeding rates, the slope increases after the initiation of baby-friendly hospital initiative. So on a global level now, we have some modest support for the international impact of BFHI. But I think what's more important is the long-term effect of changing hospital practices so that each new generation of students coming up are exposed to proper practices. Oops, am I going the wrong way? I was there. I was Sam. Okay. The classic study, perhaps, on Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative, and what I feel was the best done study from an epidemiologist viewpoint, was the Probit study in Belarus. And Michael Kramer and his colleagues carried out a quasi-experimental design where they had baby-friendly-like intervention in some oblasts and had control areas, and they were randomly selected. Michael is really very skilled at being careful about his study design. And what they found in the intervention oblasts, where the hospitals were practicing the baby-friendly hospital initiative, there were significant changes in exclusive breastfeeding. Now, being an excellent epidemiologist, Michael then never compared those who breastfed to those who didn't. He only compared his randomization. So he compared those areas that had the intervention to those areas that did not. And to me, this makes this the strongest data about the impact of baby-friendly. And what did he find? He found that in the regions with the intervention, even though not everybody exclusively breastfed, there were significant changes that you would expect that would have been caused by the increases in exclusive breastfeeding. And here are some of them listed. There's a series of studies that he's put out. What this says to me, and I hope it says to you, is that this intervention has population-level impact. Also, on intelligence scores, teachers' academic ratings, and mothers in the experimental group were nearly twice as likely to exclusively breastfeed the next child for at least 3 months. In fact, this study seemed to have the biggest impact on exclusive breastfeeding to 3 months, which means at least 12 weeks of exclusive breastfeeding. Now, despite all the other things that happen in life thereafter, I propose to you that this has set up a mother-child relationship that leads to a much easier attainment of what Jack and Nancy are trying to do, for example. When a mother and child have that hormonal link that occurs with breastfeeding, it gives them both a leg up on establishing a relationship. This is a bit of an aside, but my favorite study that has absolutely no control group is a study that showed that teenagers who were breastfed liked their parents better than teenagers who weren't breastfed. So I just, but I think that there is some validity to that because of the intimate neurological hormonal interaction that occurs with immediate skin to skin and early breastfeeding. Some individual country data supports this. In a separate study in Russia, baby-friendly hospital was associated with increased breastfeeding at 1 year. In Switzerland, compliance with the 10 steps rather than having the name baby-friendly was associated with improved breastfeeding. This is one of my favorite soapboxes also. We really don't need to get certification. We need to change the hospital practices. Thank you, Lori. Brazil, same thing. Even in the U.S., in Oregon, a survey of 50, this just came out, Ken Rosenberg, who's at this conference actually, Oregon, the survey of 57 birthing hospitals, and he looked at the breastfeeding support, which was a scale based pretty much on the baby-friendly 10 steps, found compliance with the 10 steps was kind of interesting that very few of them actually trained their staff, but quite a few of them did have helping with the breastfeeding initiation and encouraged feeding on demand, which can only occur with rooming in. What he found is that increases in overall breastfeeding support scores was highly associated with increases in breastfeeding after hospital stay. Again, so even in the United States, we find the same thing. A study that I'm involved in that's about to come out in American Journal of Public Health also shows that you don't need all 10 steps. Even 6 or 7 in place has a significant impact on breastfeeding. And to continue the point that supplemental feeding to infants in the hospital is highly associated with poor success with later breastfeeding. Bless their heart, Larry Grummer Strown and other people at CDC just added this piece of data to their national surveys. We now know that an increasing number of breastfed children are receiving formula within the first 2 days of life. And it's now about 1 in 4. There's no excuse for this. That is by no means a medical indication. Okay. Keep hitting the wrong button. I apologize. In spite of all this good stuff, many reports are out there of declines in baby-friendly hospital compliance. Now, these are also anecdotal reports worldwide. In China, we are quite sure that although at one point every single hospital was baby-friendly, we are quite sure from recent data that very few remain baby-friendly. And this was highlighted by the fact that of all the formula use that you saw recently with one of the many formula contamination issues. Why is this that there is not compliance? Now, I left that kind of as a wide open question here for us to think about. I have my ideas I certainly, the fact that the huge amount of money that went into Baby Friendly in the 1990s stopped in 1997 has something to do with it. Also, the formula companies, I did not start my life hating formula companies. I got my little Ross bag as a doctor, and I actually worked with Ross for a while. But the advertising is insidious, and the samples continue one way or another. And there is just no question that marketing works. They wouldn't spend billions of dollars on it if it didn't work. So there is no question that industry is undercutting and undermining women's sense of self-efficacy and ability to succeed with breastfeeding. If this is undercut, if mother's self-efficacy from the get-go is undercut, what's going to happen later on in the relationship with their children? Trends. Well, if you look at hospitals ever given this, the baby-friendly status certification, you see, much as you would expect, a huge increase while the UNICEF funding was on. Then a slowing, and then another little pop there when the newly emerging states came on the scene. Thanks to Michael Kramer's data, a lot of those countries realized that they better support breastfeeding. And so there was a lot of increase in those countries. And if you project this out, you can see that we're probably at about 20,000 hospitals worldwide, which is about 25% of all the hospitals in the world have at some point in time been considered baby-friendly. But we know that this does not reflect current status. Concurrent with that increase in baby-friendly and greatly determining the lack of funding that occurred thereafter was the fact of the growth of HIV on our global health picture. And Anna Katsoudis did a study in which she saw the mother-to-child transmission of breastfed kids was, as several studies had predicted, after the first 6 weeks or so, when a lot of it is prenatal or perinatal transmission, you still continue to get an increase with breastfeeding. And, of course, with formula feeding, you get that early increase that was from prenatal or perinatal, and then you don't get any much further increase. You shouldn't get any after about 6 weeks, but there still is a little bit hanging on. However, she showed another finding from this study that was funded under vitamin A money, by the way. Nobody funds studies of breastfeeding. This is what happened with exclusive breastfeeding. Shock. People threw out her data, hundreds of letters saying this clearly could not be true, from people who didn't understand the physiology of breastfeeding. But those of us who understand the physiology know that this is not a dose response of virus, but rather exclusive breastfeeding is a healthful situation in which antibodies are selectively passed from mother to child, where the gut is healthier, where there's less likely to be bleeding and less likely to be inflammation, all conditions which are known to increase virus passage. So other studies subsequently have confirmed this. If a mother, HIV-positive mother, breastfeeds, she must exclusively breastfeed to reduce the chance of transmission. And in fact, she has a very low risk of transmission in the early months. Because of this, the UN came out with a framework for priority actions on HIV and infant feeding. The first thing they say should be done for HIV and infant feeding is have a comprehensive national feeding policy that protects breastfeeding. The second thing, and this was signed by 9 UN agencies, the second thing they say is to have the International Code of Marketing in place to protect against these aggressive advertisers. I have to tell you, as soon as HIV came on the scene, I went to one of the very earliest meetings on HIV in Washington, D.C., 15 years ago. Right there were all the formula companies sponsoring meetings on HIV. After these two things are in place, then you should intensify efforts to protect and support breastfeeding, of which baby-friendly hospital is the primary one we have at our disposal. So those three things, and only after these three things in place do they recommend getting in there to provide the HIV positive women the formula option. But what has happened out there? All of us involved in the HIV and in child survival know the first thing that goes out there is the formula. And the protection of the breastfeeding doesn't happen. We've measured spillover that with all the formula out there, a lot of HIV negative women have begun to use formula. It's a wonderful marketing tool. And this is what UN calls for, but is this what the UN supports? Just a word about cost considerations. you know, maybe you could say they're not supporting it because it's so expensive. A high estimate of starting a baby-friendly hospital is about $30,000. This would include the training. This would include some practices, printing up the papers with the new policies. I mean, this is an average. It certainly will vary from place to place. And here in the United States, if you want to get certified, there's actually a large cost to the certification process, much higher than this $30,000 in total. Let's say we have about 3,100 maternities in the United States. If we put $30,000 into each hospital, that would cost $94.5 million. Now, what would be the result of this? The cost savings from reductions in infectious disease, malignant neoplasm, chronic gastrointestinal problems, insulin-dependent diabetes alone, that would be associated with a 35% increase in exclusive breastfeeding, that 35% comes from the Kramer studies, would conservatively save $2 billion a year, conservatively. This is an extremely cost-effective thing to invest in, but we don't have a private sponsor pushing for it. We don't have a lobby, and we're often forgotten. I was just at a session of the World Federation of Public Health Associations, and their Colgate-Palmolive, of course, is putting out samples of Colgate-Palmolive soap in these hand-washing studies. Wait, they, you know, I hate to be so venal about it, but an industry sends out samples not out of the goodness of its heart. It's a marketing approach. So we can just hope that those things that are sponsored by private industry also include some of these orphaned interventions, if you will, that create a silent catastrophe when they're not in place. Okay, just conclusions, recommendations. Does baby-friendly hospital make a difference? I hope you agree with me that the data show very clearly that it has a measurable and reliable impact on rates and durations of exclusive breastfeeding and continued breastfeeding. If fully implemented in the United States, baby-friendly hospital and other breastfeeding support would more than pay for itself in 1 year. Globally, this is the same. What happens, and the reason there's been such destruction of the hospitals that were already in place, is the immediate pushback from the private sector who makes money off of selling something. However, financial support for this initiative has disappeared in global and in many country programs. And I just ask you, as fellow travelers in the world of global health, why and what are we doing to ourselves? This experiment in the separation, the physical separation of mother and child from the get-go that's been going on for 150 years is profound. And even in Africa, where everybody breastfeeds, they're not breastfeeding optimally. They're not necessarily skin-to-skin, and they certainly are introducing supplements far too early and poor supplements. This pulls apart the mother and the child. The best early childhood development intervention is support for mother-child intimacy of breastfeeding for 2+ years. And I just wanted to conclude by saying that I think it's logical to recommend that we raise the profile of baby-friendly by actively introducing the new materials. UNICEF and WHO have just come out with new, better organized, more progressive, up-to-date materials that include the mother more actively, that address HIV, and that address communities, and provide step-by-step guidance for action. They're online. We certainly should be introducing breastfeeding as part of healthcare reform. There should be a line item for this. We're doing integrated programs now because they're cheaper, and I say, fine, integrate breastfeeding into those programs, but don't bury it. And what happens is it's number 13 on everybody's list of 7. We really have to do more in mobilizing community demand creation. The community must demand that the hospitals give them quality care in the maternity. And I think there's room, and maybe we can get this started in the Carolina Breastfeeding Institute, to carry out a survey of donor agencies and then to give them the feedback of what their impact of lack of funding this area is doing. So I just wanted to thank you very much for your interest in this very primary child survival intervention. We also have a sign-up if any of you are interested in being part of the new Breastfeeding Forum at APHA. Thank you very much.